Greetings, my revolutionary friends. You could be anywhere in the world. That's why we love this show. You could be in Europe. You could be in America. You could be in Australia, China. Wherever you are in the world, you're welcome. And this is going to be a fascinating discussion because I have Françoise Pernière from TSG Group, who has exceptional experience and knowledge in understanding energy. He's an engineer. He understands the technical aspect of it. He certainly understands the commercial aspect of it and understands the electric vehicle proposition extremely well. How do I know that? Well, we always have a little bit of preparation before we come on these calls. Of course we do, because we want to give you the very best of the topic we're going to discuss. And that today is about how fuel retailers can maximize their revenue with EV charging. So, Françoise, bienvenue, welcome. How are you?
Thank you very much. Very well. Thank you, Roger. Very happy to be part of the show.
Well, we're going to have a good show. We have an hour. We will have probably after about 30 minutes questions from the audience.
Absolutely.
If you've watched any of the previous events, we occasionally like to surprise our audience by inviting them onto the stage, which could be a bit of fun. But obviously, it's a serious subject. The serious subject now of energy all over Europe is incredibly serious. We all know that. So yes, we're aware of the commercial realities, the domestic realities that everybody's facing, but we do like to have an hour of good information, good discussion. And yeah, if we can have a bit of fun, I think people, I think they look forward to that. Hopefully they do. Hopefully they need that, Françoise. So as I said, you've got great experience, particularly at EDF. And, you know, whether you're French, obviously you're French, all around Europe, and especially in the UK, we're very familiar with EDF. They're a very strong and strategic and important partner for the UK, without doubt. And I guess, you know, many other places too. So yes, that's who you are. Can you tell me a little bit about TSG Group just before we start our conversation, just so everybody, you know, it frames it nicely in terms of what you're all about?
Yes.
So, give us a couple of minutes on that, please.
Good. First of all, thank you, Roger, for giving us and me the opportunity to have this very interesting talk. Good morning, good afternoon to all the listeners. I am so the EV director at the group level of TSG. TSG is pan-European and African companies. We are a service company focusing on installation and service and providing technical services. We are the European leader in technical services for responsible mobility, bringing the solution to our customers. We have a long historical background of installing, maintaining fuel stations all across Europe. We have been, and we are currently serving more than 50,000 fuel stations. But over the last 10 years, we have been developing more and more new business lines in the group. I'm actually leading one of them. Towards more sustainable mobility, bringing more car wash systems, gas, clean gas, biogas, hydrogen, also energy sustainable. And more recently, and this is the fastest growing business line today, TSG Charge, focusing on charging infrastructure for our customers. We employ more than 5,000 employees. So we are really a company doing installation services on the ground with our own employees. Two-thirds of them are technicians. We work in 25 countries across Europe with a dedicated e-mobility division in every of those countries. So our guest today will be able to answer your question and give you some examples, not only of a few countries, but with a wider vision, which is, of course, always interesting to see what are the differences from one country to the other. Some are clearly more mature in the Nordics, starting with Denmark, Norway, of course, but all as well as the Netherlands. Germany, UK, France are following and are really taking also a very strong leadership in terms of volumes. And we are starting now very recently for the last 2 years and even more last year to see a significant rise and growth in e-mobility and the request for charging infrastructure in Southern Europe, in particular in Italy, in Spain, Portugal, and more also in Eastern Europe. So yes, extremely interested.
Good. Well, listen, that's very interesting and reflected actually, as it happens, by our audience. I'm just going to give you a little sense of where people are from. Poland, Switzerland, Belgium, London, France in New York, in the United States. So, already you can see in the audience that reflects the fact you are an international company with a lot of employees doing a lot of work. And what we like to do, just before we get into all of our questions, and then, yes, for sure, I'd like to see questions come in from the audience, which we will ask sort of certainly halfway through, is we like to run a poll before we start any of these sessions. We did that, and this was the question we asked. How often do you charge your EV, if you have one, of course, at a gas station? So here's the answers. 13% said once a week. 10% said once a month. 32% said only during long trips, and 45% said almost never. Now, that's what the poll said. I can't change that. That's how people responded. And, you know, a lot of comment that we got then was typically stuff, you know, like, well, what do you want to learn from this survey? Surely you know that people charge at home and at work. Well, yes, they do. But, you know, let's just think about this for a minute. For as many EVs are now being sold, it's still a relatively small number to the volume of vehicles in the vehicle park. So a lot of them are what we call, everybody knows this phrase, early adopters. But once we get into the bigger groups of people, the people who perhaps at the end of this decade, let's be honest here, perhaps didn't necessarily want to go into an EV, but that's the way that legislation and everything is driving stuff, people are likely to behave very differently from these early adopters. So I think that's what the survey said, but, you know, I think we're going to see some different things happening. And by the way, right up to date, I watched the BYD Europe launch presentation this morning. Did you catch it? Did you see that by any chance?
No, I didn't have a chance this morning.
Okay. Well, look, I'm lucky in my job. I get the chance to do these things. I don't have a proper job, Francois, so I've got the luxury of that. Well, here's the thing. So you have three new vehicles coming to Europe from BYD, a company that actually has been in Europe for well over a decade,
one way or another.
But the one thing that stood out, lots of things stood out for me was, number one, they're coming. Number two, the cars are good. Number three, you know, the pricing's pretty keen. But the thing about it was when they talked about charging, because this was always, I always look out for this when I hear a vehicle launch. It's like, yeah, oh, it's nice and new and shiny and costs that much. Yeah, great. What about the charging? And what the chairman, I think it was Chairman Wang, talked about, or maybe the end, at the end, was that it was Shell. They would be partnering with Shell in regard to fuel retailing, electric vehicle charging. And I know at the moment there's a challenge for, you know, how everybody sees the oil and gas industry, the traditional energy companies. And we'll come to this, I'm sure, during our conversation. Let's not forget that Shell, BP, Total, these companies are delivering at the moment the biggest amount of electric vehicle charging, certainly in Europe. So, you know, in a way, I wasn't surprised to see the Chinese, you know, big brand like BYD announced that. But, you know, there you are. That's what it is. But let me start going through some questions because I want to give you a hard time. I want to see how much you really know. So like I said, over the coming few decades, it's just going to be, EV. How do you see the growth starting? Is it mainly going to be business and fleet first and then the public? What do you think is the first wave, if you like?
Clearly, as we can see, and I have been in that business for almost 10 years as well, the first wave we are seeing, and it's a considered one, is passenger vehicles, right? This is really the nice fit today between the technology, the capacity of the batteries, the weight of those batteries, and the range that is able to be done with this technology. And thanks to this, in average now in Europe, about 15% of the new cars sold in Europe are actually BEVs or PHEVs. Also to mention that the share of BEV to PHEV is progressively increasing year after year, showing more and more confidences, both by the manufacturer, but also by the customer in full EV vehicles. Now, as it was mentioned, it still represents a very minor part of the global fleet. At the moment, we have about 4 million electrified vehicles, half BEV, half PHEVs, which represent only globally 2% of the fleet, right? Mm-hmm. So the revolution has started. Most of the experts today say it will not come back, at least for the passenger vehicles. But we are just at the infancy of this. And what we see is a constant trend of more and more electrical vehicles in the passenger segment for the next decades. Okay. Now, what we are also seeing, and that's quite interesting, for the last 2 to 3 years, we have been seeing a new segment growing, which is the light vehicle segment. And at TSG, we are a company working exclusively for B2B customers, and we have been seeing more and more B2B fleet customers, in particular logistic companies, switching progressively to the very first version of light commercial vehicles. Some are very well known, you know, postal delivery services, parcel delivery services like Amazon's, DHL and so on. And those companies, both because of obligations, but also because of clear commitment to a more sustainable business, now they are using those very first version of light vehicles, and in particular in the very big cities across Europe.
Mm.
And we're even more surprised to finish on your question that very recently, and here we are not talking 2 or 3 years, we are talking 6 months back, we have been seeing more and more requests from not anymore the close logistic companies, but the longer range companies that are actually also our historical customers, the ones that are operating 15, 30 tons, even 40 tons vehicles, which are starting to test the first e-trucks. And this is a new step where we see that what we thought would be limited initially to only passenger vehicle or light commercial vehicle is also gaining more and more ground and space in the heavy transportation. Of course, not to do 3,000 miles or 3,000 kilometers, but at least up to 200, 250 nowadays, it makes sense, which represents for trucks potentially half of the freight transported.
That's really interesting. Why do you think that's happening? Is that because of legislation? I guess to some extent. Is that because people are discovering a total cost of ownership benefit? Or why is that? Why do you think you're seeing maybe this faster adoption in commercial fleets, delivery fleets, some of the bigger ones, as you mentioned? Any thoughts?
Our analysis is that it's following the same trend that what happens, let's say, from 6 to 10 years in the passenger vehicles. First, and in the heavy or light vehicles, this is about subsidies that are making that proposition viable from a commercial point of view. This is clearly the point when it comes to e-trucks. There is massive European subsidies to support the additional cost, both in terms of capex of the vehicles and of the related infrastructure. But if we project ourselves in a few years, it's clear that the total cost of ownership, in particular for heavy transportation, which is driven mainly by the OPEX, so the energy cost, fuel cost, will make a significant difference. Then what we believe is, anyway, it will be a mix, right? There will be not one technology fits all. There will be a mix of energies for the different usages. For sure, when we come to heavy transportation, we will have a mix of more decarbonized fuel, e-fuels, hydrogen, some electrical vehicles, the same, and maybe with a different share when it comes to light commercial vehicles, and a minor part of the long-term passenger cars that will remain as well, let's say, with more IC technologies, but more related to decarbonized one. So we strongly believe is the future will be made of a mix.
Well, I was out of the country out of Europe. I was only in America for the last couple of months, so I missed the IAA event. And I know at that event, where there was a lot of commercial fleet vehicles launched and shown, etc., exactly what you've just said, so I won't repeat it, was very much, you know, the presentation of the market. We're not going to put all our eggs in one basket. However, the electric vehicle is the dominant proposition, battery electric, and therefore increased, you know, charging propositions, you know, scaled right up to, you know, megawatt charging, are now happening and need to carry on happening. We mustn't forget the title of our topic, by the way, how fuel retailers can maximize their revenue with EV charging. So let me ask you this question. Are forecourts, the traditional fuel station forecourt, do you think they're the only suitable locations for retailers to benefit from the switch to electric mobility?
Well, definitely they are not the only locations, but they are strategic locations. Over the last 3 years, we have been seeing a significant rise in the request of our historical customers to add more and more fast charging stations, fast charging hubs, fast chargers into their forecourts with different size. And we'll be able to come back to that after. And this is for a clear reason, we believe. Fuel retailer forecourts are historically located in key strategic location for mobility. The people are still traveling. What changed is the way they fuel their car. And tomorrow they will not fuel it anymore. They will charge it, right? But they are still traveling along the same highways, along the same roads. They are still doing more or less globally the same trips. And these locations, these forecourts have been located strategically on those connection nodes for the last decades. They are also equipped with facilities, being in terms of retail, being as simple as water closets, rooms to change, sometimes to be able to take showers. They are also equipped with maybe some workshop nearby. If you have a problem with your car, you can also wash. Sometimes you can also vacuum. Of course, you can add the pressure in your tires. So all an ecosystem, which is very interesting and is a very important value proposition to any customer. And this is for everybody, anybody that has been driving and charging an EV on the go, on the move. It's always extremely appreciated if during the time you will fast charge your vehicles, which is still slightly higher than the time of refueling it, you will be able to have access to some commodities and services.
Yes, yes. Now, can I just frame something around the past, the present, and then, of course, the future? So in the past, right at the beginning of combustion engine vehicles, there weren't petrol stations everywhere. They didn't exist because, you know, go back to 1920, 1930, they started to come along. People had to get their fuel, you know, and bring it home and do it at home. It's funny how we're getting back to that place again, but I'm just looking at some research that I did. According to a Boston Consulting Group study, they said without significant changes to their business models, at least a quarter, 25% of the service stations worldwide were at risk of closure by 2035. Now, again, to give people a little bit of perspective, there are 40,000 fuel stations across the whole of the European continent. I'm assuming that includes the UK. I still like to think of the UK in Europe, by the way, if that's okay with you, Francois. And then the other thing, another factor I saw was in European and North American economies, the share of operating profits for non-fuel retail is up to 40 to 50%. So my question to you is this. If over the next 10, 20, 30 years, slowly but surely, we go away from internal combustion engines, and people can fuel their vehicles in different locations, like at home, as we saw in the survey, like at work, as people mentioned in the survey. You know, what's the future for fuel retail? Do you see, you've gone through some benefits there a moment ago, but do you see a benefit, a market for people like we're seeing companies like GridServe? Are you familiar with GridServe in the UK?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, well, I guess, yes. Sorry, it was a rude question. You know what you're doing, of course you are. And then you've got Fastned, you've got Circle K, you've got people who are either traditional, and of course Shell and BP and the others, the traditional people that are pure combustion, you know, hydrocarbon fueling. And then you've got people who are just pure electric fueling, and now people in the middle of all of that. Where's this all going, do you think, Francois?
Yeah, it's actually a very good question. And of course, in terms of positioning, we always ask ourselves this question. The poll is actually a quite good representation of the actuality today. But if you allow me, Roger, I would like to come back a little bit on the raw statistics, in particular the one given by the international energy agencies. So at the moment, clearly 80% of the charging is done either at home or at the workplace. The remaining 20%, it used to be 10% in the past, is done on the way, on the go. First thing we have to understand is there is an evolution. There is more and more charging out of the home and workplace for different reasons. The first one is clearly in the early market, the people that had access to EV were relatively wealthy people with rather high trend and high value vehicles. But now the e-mobility is getting more democratized and with cheaper and almost now at the same price, depending on the country and tax benefits, as ICE vehicles. So more people are getting in, and people that are not as wealthy, so they mean people that may not have a home, I mean house with a garden, with a personal parking, where they can actually install a charger and charge at home. In the market, there will be more and more people that will have to find an alternative for charging. So it's well possible that in the future, this share 80-20 I was mentioning to, as of today in an average, will further increase with more charging out of home and workplace. But now, out of home and workplace, we don't have, as you were mentioning earlier, only the historical fuel and now multi-energy companies. We have the new CPOs, new pure charging companies, either backed by investment funds. You mentioned a few of them, Fastned, Allego, and so on, or even GridServe. You also have the ones that are financed and supported directly by car manufacturer in the light of Tesla, or Ionity, and there are more now also in the Southern European market growing up. And finally, you also have the historical electrical companies, the utilities, in the light of E.ON, ENBVs, you mentioned EDF, of course, but also Enel, Enelix, Endesa. They are all, you know, willing to take a part of that future market, right? Of that future market of on the go. And this is only for the on the move segment. You have also then the supermarket segments, the retail segments that are also part of the equation, but usually with a little bit less fast charger. If we come back to the retail market and the fuel retail market, here comes the point. People tend to not to know or to forget that the fuel retail is actually composed by two words, fuel and retail.
Yeah, good point.
There is selling fuel, that was a historical business, but there have been more and more retail as well. There is a lot of forecourts nowadays, which are part of dispenser and a shop, a convenient shop, services, car wash, parcel deliveries. And this part of the business is actually, and the same studies, we can see there is one interesting from a year ago from McKinsey that clearly says that there is a balanced revenue in terms of profits from the both business line. And the two are fully synergetical. If there was not the traffic coming from the fuel, there will be not the revenue on the retail. If it was not the retail service, there will not be traffic on the fuel side. And this equation is extremely important, because what we start to see is that the forecourt owner, being the Cocos or Dodos in the internal namings, they clearly see that tomorrow they have an opportunity as well to diversify the service offered to the customer, not only fuel, but also electricity, gas, maybe hydrogen in the future, becoming or transforming the forecourt, the fuel station, in a multi-energy station, in a multi-energy hub, and still having the traffic to create the synergies with the retail part.
Yeah, well, that's the crucial thing, isn't it? It's got to pay its way. It's got to be a business, which is, you know, the title of our topic today. I'm going to ask the audience, please, if you have any questions, put them in. I will come to them in just a few minutes, but I'm going to ask one more question. I'm going to give you a real challenge now, Francois. So on the one hand, we're going to have a number of vehicles. In Europe, it's going to be millions. On the other hand, we then need to ramp up the number of charging points. So I'm going to give you some numbers on this, again, that I've got a little bit of data on. Shell announced it'll install 500,000 on-street electric charging points by 2025. BP have said they'll increase their network of EV charging points to 70,000 by 2030. And Total will increase its EV charging network in Europe to 150,000 charging points by 2025. And that's up from 18,000 today. Now, they're the numbers of charge points. But let's just put another spanner in the works here, or challenge to you. It's not just the number of chargers, it's where they are and how people are going to use them in terms of the time of day or time of night. What sort of modeling, or what is your sense of how do we prepare for, if you like, the kind of organic use of charging, so that we don't either have, yeah, lots of chargers, but everybody's queuing up for them because they're all trying to fill up with fuel at the same time. You see this at petrol stations today. You see people on a Monday evening after they've gone to work the first day of the working week, all queuing up for fuel. Why didn't they do it at the weekend? I mean, people behave strangely. So yes, all of these numbers from people, thousands of charging points, this and this and this, but how will it work in reality in terms of, you know, 24/7, 365 days of the year? What's your sense of that?
Actually, a lot of people usually try to look at the future comparing it to the past. So, you know, sometimes people ask, well, I have so many dispensers, so how many chargers shall I have? Or fast chargers shall I have? And the future actually may not look exactly the same. The mobility of tomorrow will not be exactly like the mobility of yesterday for several reasons. The first one is that nowadays people will be able to charge at home or at workplace before taking a big trip, right? Instead of saying, well, I will stop on the way and fuel, right? So that's the first point. Then with e-mobility as well, people are not driving the same as they used to do. Before it was only, let's go fast. We have clear technical constraints with e-mobility that, well, if you move at 110 kilometer per hour instead of 130, you will save 30% of energy. So you have 30% more range, right? So that means that people may not always take the biggest, shortest way because they may save 5 minutes. They may take one which is parallel. And so that means that there may be less congestion, right? Now, we all have in mind the picture of, you know, some Tesla queue for Thanksgiving Day in California, right?
Yeah.
For 2 hours or 4 hours. And we know that also in Europe, there are those critical days where all people are traveling at the same time, right?
Yes.
But as well, it's important to see that there are solutions that are being engineered for those new challenges. I would just mention a few of them just to illustrate my examples. Historically, it was almost impossible to add a dispenser, you know, a tank, a fuel tank and vessel on top of an existing one for clear safety reasons, right? But nowadays, companies are already starting to propose in the Nordics for peak periods to install temporary fast chargers, sometimes installing in racks, containerized solution with battery packs that are able, you know, to adapt the infrastructure to the mobility. There is another point also that people do not always think. You will have realized that usually on highways, you have usually one fuel station on one side of the highway and you have a fuel station on the other one.
Yes. Yeah.
All these fuel stations are always connected by an underground network, but those ones are usually closed today. Mm-hmm. We could also imagine to adapt slightly that infrastructure to allow in some periods people to charge on the other way. So there are multiple technical solutions that will help in order to improve the solution. But globally, what we will see, and that will be my final point on this, is more and more fast chargers and up to ultra fast chargers. So 150 kilowatt per charging point and above. When we are on highways or main traffics, then a reasonable amount of them in the peripheries of the cities and maybe slightly lower power, but in the range of 100 kilowatt and so on, when we are exactly in the town centers.
Right. Now, thank you. There's a lot in that response, which I hope people have noticed. But one of the things that jumped out on me was you described, you know, as things progress in the future, we'll have more fast charging, etc. So there's a question here that I saw from Eloise. If companies invest in expensive charging equipment today, how long does it last before technology catches up and they have to invest again? So thinking of our title, How to Fuel Retailers Maximize Their Revenue, if people are investing in the stuff today, how do they know that in 3 years or 5 years' time that that piece of equipment isn't any good anymore? How do they know that? I mean, you know your business very well. You're an engineer, like I said at the beginning. You've been at EDF for a long time. You're a really smart guy. But people in traditional fuel retailing and all the rest of it, this is all new to them. So how do they know when to do it, or to just wait a bit? I mean, it's a very good question, I think, from Eloise. Then there's another question I'm going to come on to in a moment as well. So, but try that one first, if you want.
Okay. Indeed, excellent question. And there are two elements in this. First of all, we have to say that we have all to recognize that we are in a very dynamic market, which is at infancy, right? We are talking 2% of electrified vehicles, right? 1% of BEV on the fleet. We are just at the beginning. And this is a kind of S-curve that will last for 10 to 20 years. And then, of course, then follow up. We are just at the beginning. And the technology also has been in its beginning. But we are starting still to have experience, right? There are more than 250 public charging stations all across Europe today. And we are able now to say this technology works better than this one. There have been like at least three different level of technologies. And the product, for example, of EVBox with a Tronic Modular is a good example of a further technology upgrades now using more versatile, more modular technology, which are able to better bring efficiency, but also flexibility to the customer. I was saying just earlier, we are talking about different level of power depending on the locations. But yes, true. If I invest in a 300 kilowatt charger, I am sure that I will pay back my investment in a few years. Maybe not. So there may be solution today to invest, let's say, in a casing that could fit 300 kilowatt or 240 kilowatt, and I will fit only 120. And then I can add more and more power racks as much as we see that the traffic is growing and the demand, demand is rising. That's a key question. So yes, maturity is not yet there, but at least for everybody which is listening, it's important to state that compared to 5 or 10 years ago, now there are norms and there are protocols that have been actually becoming ISO norms, which are able to standardize more the technology.
Sure. Listen, we are racing through the time. I can't believe how quickly it's going. I'm going to invite someone up onto the stage, Francois. Honestly, this could be 2 hours, this subject. It's so important and so interesting. So thank you for giving all of us this. I'm seeing if Luc van Marck from Belgium can join us on stage. Sometimes it's a little bit fiddly doing that, but hopefully not. There you go. I think Luc will join the stage. Yeah. We're getting him his mic and camera permissions. So, Luc, hopefully you can hear me. Welcome to the stage. You can ask Francois your question in person, my friend. So, fire away.
Hi, Luc. We're working on a fast charging network through Wallonia, in which we would want to. We have a plan to build the first 130 of those fast chargers, but actually, I'm doing this like a little bit like I feel like a pirate and like a cowboy, because actually I still don't completely see how I will manage to pay back all these installations with a price that I can get for only 0.75 or something in the charging cost. I'm doing it because I believe in it, and I know that it will have to go through it anyway. We don't have a choice, but I don't have all the answers.
Good for you, Luc. Good for you for doing it, though, Luc. But it's a great question. Francois, how can this add up? This stuff is really expensive. What's a 350 kilowatt charger? I don't know. 100,000? I mean, it's a lot of money, isn't it? Luc's got a great point. How do you make it pay back?
Yeah. So, We have to recognize two things here. The first is the level of the price. I think Luke was mentioning 0.75 cents per kilowatt hour, which is, honestly speaking, a very expensive price in terms of energy, but is aligned with the current prices we can see on Ionity, Tesla network, and so on. Everybody needs to understand that in a normal electrical market, so I will be back in 6 months back, yeah, because now price have been surging everywhere on the spot market. But this will be about, yeah, five times the price that the electricity will be bought from the utility. So this five times here is money that can be put back on investment, right? And operation. But the operation is relatively marginal compared to the investment. Now, important also is to understand that the investment is composed by at least two pieces to make it simple. The hard infrastructure, the one which is on the ground, underground, and connected to the network. Basically, when we are talking, like in the case of Luke, we are talking about fast charging hubs. You will install several, maybe tens of fast charging and chargers. We are talking about 1 to 2 megawatt connection to the grid, means transformer cabinet, DNO connections, expensive one. Mm-hmm. Then you will need to have all the electrical panels, protection and distribution down to the charger. So that piece here is not a piece that if, even though the, and there will be some technical evolution from the technology and the charge perspective, this one is common. This one is like the one you can see on the distribution network. There are pieces of equipment that will last 30 to 40 years.
Sure. Right? Okay.
So that one will be paid back on the long term. Now, the other part, which is a charger, is the one where clearly here we have to make a smart and nice design, looking at being cautious, efficient, and flexible for future increase in the future. And here, companies like TSG, which are doing a full turnkey solution and bringing services, we are not the only one also on the market, but company like us can support companies that are willing to be part of this adventure. And above all, and this is a key point, is being part of this early player on the market. A lot on the market today that we can see on this on the move. And this is why, you know, fuel retail location forecourts are so strategical. It's all about land grabbing. This is all about putting a flag of EV charging in a strategic location because we will be the first there. And then people will, that the habit to charge here. And, and there will be more and more business around this place.
Sure. Listen, I'm going to push you to go through a few more questions, and we've only got less than 15 minutes. So, by the way, Luke, I didn't shove you off the stage on purpose. I did it accidentally, Luke, by the way. But Luke was mentioning, you know, a number of numbers in there, which would be good to look at. But let me just whiz through a few of these questions. So Yannick is asking, what challenges come with the rapid growth of charging points? Can the electricity grid handle this? This is a question that will come up every week in every event like this, because, of course, people who don't know how the grid works and all of this, they worry about it. I don't blame them. And if if it's all new to them, you might have talked about it for years, so might I. But, you know, somebody maybe like Yannick is just thinking, can it work? Is there enough grid connection to deliver all of these EV chargers? What do you say to Yannick?
Yeah, there are always a lot of concerns when it comes to capacity in terms of energy and in terms of connections. So definitely, if it comes to energy, it's important to recognize that even though the full part of the mobility will be electrified, this will still represent only 15 to 20% of the electrical consumption of Europe today, right? So there is not an energy problem.
Good.
It's a challenge. It's not a problem. The problem is power. It's connection, right? Now, when it comes to connection, it's important to understand that the connection is challenging when it comes in low voltage. So the voltage that people will have at home, but it's relatively standard to connect megawatts of load. So this is basically what we talk in terms of power when it comes to a fast charging pad, which is still representing a consumption equivalent for a small city, a small town, let's say. And it's important to understand that this is available on medium voltage. This requires some infrastructure adaptation. And that's why it needs some time for planning, for permitting, in order to be able to properly design those infrastructure.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Sometimes this planning and preparation is essential. Of course it is, for the reasons you've just explained, but that does get in the way of some of the commercial opportunity. I'm going to go through these in the sequence I've got them. This is from Karim, who says, hi, Francois, by the way, Karim Dehont. I think they know you. it's a kind of comment, really. He says, doesn't it look a bit tricky for companies like Fastned, where there are only DC chargers as such, and their only source of revenue comes from electricity? I mean, given what we're talking about, how do fuel retailers maximize their revenue? Having these other revenue streams that you mentioned, some of them, the shop, the coffee shop, you know, the business facility, the so on. Yeah, I mean, maybe it does make that difficult. And then coming on to the next one because it's in order. I know who the next person is. Joshua Atkins happens to be, he's my son. he says, Francois, do you think that there is an appetite for fuel retailers to invest in and operate charging themselves? Or are they better off partnering with existing and experienced charge point operators?
Yes, it's a really good question. And the investment that we have been talking about in terms of infrastructure is such that definitely it's probable that the future will be actually a mix of different businesses. There will be pure player like Fastned, the one which we're mentioning earlier. There may be people that we have a core business like GridServe from Joshua, where you will have both retail place, resting rooms, meeting rooms, workplaces, shared workplaces, but as well the retailers. We are seeing, and the Nordics again are always kind of enlightening when you go there and you see in the first Cycle K stations close to Oslo, you have a new ecosystem around these historical fuel station places where you have both Cycle K putting their chargers and operating them. You have nearby a pure player like Mia. And then on the other edge, you will have a Tesla installing their charger and all sharing the same facilities, right?
Yeah.
You could very well as well have in the future some of the newest player. It's also happening close to Oslo and now in Germany that are pioneering new charging solution like battery swap, right? So it's all about treating ecosystems, multi-energies, multi-services around the places. And the solution, the winning one, really be cooperation.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I absolutely can see facilities, you know, filling stations that offer electricity, petrol, diesel, hydrogen, maybe battery swap, maybe even wireless, maybe all of them together. But obviously, they can only do that if it's going to be a viable commercial proposition. Now, that's the retailer. But just thinking of the customer a second, Claire asks a great question. Claire Lelouet. She says, would you consider high power charging is only for fleet drivers and regular business to consumer clients will stay away from it due to its prices? This is a big issue at the moment. If you look at charging at home, just in the UK, there's a disparity with VAT, the tax. It's crazy. So if you charge at home, you pay 5% tax. If you charge on a public network, you pay 20% tax, VAT. That's just wrong. That's not fair on people often who are least available, at least able to pay the extra cost. So Claire's question, do you think, at the moment it's a crazy time. We've got this horrible situation with the Russian war in Ukraine. We've got this crazy situation with, you know, the gas tap being turned off, all of these strange things. So let's just calm ourselves and imagine we go back to some degree of normality at some point. Does Claire still have a good point there? Are we going to have this kind of business using the fueling people and most other people doing it at home and at workplace? What do you think?
Yeah. Personally, I believe that people are always trying, personal people, right, are always trying to be more savvy than businesses. They are very close to their wallet.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And we actually see it when it comes to the PHEV, right? The only people that are actually doing a reasonable use of a PHEV are private people, right? They see it from their wallet. So there may be in the future more fleet and fleet cards, and this comes to the payment, and there are more and more integration with the historical fleet cards and businesses across public charging stations, the new ones, the historical ones, and the new ones coming to the forecourts. But as well, there will be a share of people which are doing, you know, long journeys, and they have on just no other options than to charge on those future fast charging hubs. Important will be have some kind of reasonable prices. And we have been seeing a clear inflation on fast charging prices recently, clearly aligned or triggered by the increase of the electricity price on the markets. There will be, I believe, on the long term with the crisis solving out, some stabilization.
Yeah.
And we clearly need also to get and tackle on that market challenge, which will be more transparency on prices.
Yeah.
Once that would be done, yes, we may clearly come back to what we see today on the fuel world, which is a lot of people charging with business fuel cards and people, personal ones, using it as a complementary to their other option, which is charging at home.
Sure. I'm going to come on to a final question, which is asking you for a little bit of a kind of example case to something. But before I get to that, can I make this suggestion? And I truly believe this. At the moment, the size of a battery is typically 60, 70, 80 kilowatts in an electric vehicle. We now know, we're increasingly aware, that the challenge of building enough batteries, getting enough raw materials, having enough gigafactories is going to be a big problem. So if we can see a better charging proposition, including all that we've been talking about, home, workplace, but also public, and we can then downsize the batteries to make them 40 kilowatt, 30 kilowatt, because it's easier to charge, you know, maybe a little bit more regularly, but not inconveniently. I personally believe that the future has to be really fantastic charging networks and smaller batteries. Because I think the beginning of this electric vehicle journey, people have wanted 300, 400, 500 mile range, because the charging infrastructure, let's be honest, from the beginning is not very good, not very reliable, and all these other things. But as the picture you're describing develops, and as retailers come into this, I can see a much better business case for everything, you know, for business itself, but also for climate change, the challenge of resources and all of the things, of having a really good charging infrastructure and less reliance on great big batteries. So you've encouraged me to believe that more by a lot of what you've said and some of our great questions. But I'm going to finish on this last question for you. Do you have an example, Francois, of like an installation from start to finish, what some of the challenges might have been in that, and you know, and how could a fuel retailer prepare for it? Can you, without probably naming a name, or we can if you want, give us an example of, you know, how to do it?
Yes. So building a fast charging station, a fast charging hub, is something that cannot be improvised. It needs to be well planned in advance. It needs some preliminary studies, site surveys. Then usually it comes to permit, depending on the countries, a construction permit, local authority permitting. That can take time. But yeah. What can take even more time is definitely what we were mentioning earlier, which is the necessity to bring transformer and to connect in high voltage to the network. High voltage means 20 kilovolt. So this is, of course, managed through the local DNOs, and that actually is a process that needs to be managed. So this permitting takes time, can take from 3 to 6, 9 months, as well as the third challenge will be the lead time of the critical hardware, namely the chargers, but also the transformer or even the protection nowadays, which had also with the different geopolitical crisis and supply chain issues that we have been all running through, have been going from historically a few months, 3 months, to more than 6 to 9 months nowadays again. That's why planning in advance is important, getting the support to do it efficiently and finding the right solution. But then planning properly the different step. And then once we have got hardware confirmation, DNO connection and permitting, then being very efficient in the realization to minimize the impact on a business which has to follow running. It's not acceptable to shut down for 9 months a forecourt or a retail place, right? So then we need to be very sure. And all this is, yes, not easy to do. It's not impossible as well. It just need experience and support from well-trained specialists like TRG can be, and as TRG has been doing in the last year to support its customers.
Well, you know, look, that's great advice. And the thing for sure that we've seen, let's say, over decades is that fuel retailing has adapted. It has changed with the times. It's changed with the technology. It's changed with the culture. I know when we had a brief chat, I told you my first job when I was 15 was I was what they call a pump jockey. You know, I would come out and fill up the customer's car with petrol. It's what you did. People didn't do it themselves. And then we moved on to other things. So over the years, the business model has changed. And as you've described, it's going to change again. And equally, as you've suggested, getting to understand it now is a good thing, because there will be, like there is in all opportunities, a bit of a land grab, a bit of a queue. And if you're not at the front of the queue, you maybe won't get served. So I think understanding and following this very closely now is very important. For sure, at the moment, you've mentioned it, some of our visitors, some of our callers, and some of our questions have been about this. At the moment, there is a crazy situation with energy pricing. But we mustn't let that completely confuse us as to what is the long-term future. So, look, Francois, this has been fascinating. We really could have done this for 2 hours because there would have been more questions. I had lots, but I didn't want to ask them if people who were joining wanted to ask a question. I'm glad my son asked a question and you said it was a good one. That was a relief. I wish you well. Thank you again. I guess people can look you up on LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
So they can connect with you on LinkedIn, find out more if they've got some specific questions. But thank you very much for your time and being generous with your knowledge and experience. It's been fascinating. So Francois, thank you. Merci bien. À tout à l'heure.
Thank you, Roger. And thank you to all the nice listeners and all the questions that were risen. And we keep ourselves available with all the teams to support and make that journey a smooth and sustainable one.
Very well put. That's a very nice conclusion. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we will see you all again. But for now, this is Revolution Live signing off. Don't forget to join us next month. We'll be having another fantastic guest, a good discussion, and you too can come on stage. So look forward to that. Goodbye. Au revoir.
Au revoir.